Welcome back to What Do They Know podcast. This week, the guys react to all the wildcard action from Saturday and Sunday and preview next week's matchups in the divisional round. But hey, what do they know?
What do they know? Well, we are about to find out. Welcome back to the wildcard round playoff edition on the What Do They Know podcast. Nick and Jeff back with you as always, as we are almost wrapped up with wildcard weekend. Four games complete? One playing as we speak, and then one tomorrow night with the Vikings and the Rams. So here to break down some top stories of some of the games that have happened so far, preview some of the matchups that we know so far heading into divisional round, and any top stories that might have come up. What do you think of the action so far?
Yeah, so far, I mean, in terms of the games we picked last week, not a lot of stuff has kind of like blown our expectations except that Houston Chargers game. Yeah. We both picked LA to win that game.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll get into that in a little bit.
For sure.
Outside of that, I mean, the Bills took care of business. The Eagles and the Packers were pretty much deadlocked in a defensive game, which took me a little back. But it shows both defenses were especially Philadelphia's defense is ready for Super Bowl run. We'll see what their offense cooks up further down the line because they're going to need it for sure. But yeah, outside of that, I've enjoyed it because it's wild card weekend. How can you not enjoy playoff football?
Absolutely. Yep. Before we get into that action, I'm going to go over a non-playoff related story.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I feel like we both, and along with the majority of the people in America, predicted this.
But yeah.
As of this morning, Mike Vrabel is officially the new head coach of the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've said on this show that was really the only thing that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
With them suddenly firing Gerard Mayo after one season, less than an hour after their last game.
Yeah.
But you know, no more suspense. Vrabel officially in New England. I think that's a fantastic signing for New England. I've already heard that he's going to bring in Josh McDaniel. I mean, obviously that's unofficial, but even Rob Gronkowski was saying on the Fox pregame show that he needs to pick up the phone and call Josh McDaniels and bring him in as the OC. So, I mean, that immediately brings a level of
is this like stint number 3 or 4 for Josh McDaniels there?
It's got to be.
It's crazy.
It's got to be. Yeah.
That's insane.
The dude has like 9 lives as an offensive coordinator. Can't New be England. A head coach worth a crap, but
right.
He's a good offensive coordinator. Oh, I guess man. That's, you know. One thing that he can say.
Yep.
I wanted to know, and I wanted to get your take on this whole thing, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask this. I kind of forgot about it, admittedly, but the Rooney Rule. The Rooney Rule is for head coach and above levels, right, where you have to interview 2 minority candidates before you can hire your head coach,
right?
So a lot of controversy controversy around the way teams handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed this week, but, and this is how I knew that it was a formality. I want to say it was like Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
New England flew in Byron Leftwich and Pep Hamilton.
Pep Hamilton.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Hamilton hasn't been in the league since 2022.
Okay.
And Leftwich hasn't been an OC since the last time he was in Tampa, which I want to say was the 22-23 season, maybe last year.
Uh-huh.
So the dude's not even they're not even in
coaching,
the league.
Right.
So to me, that is just blatantly like sidestepping the rule and the idea behind the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and that's why side note, a lot of people are saying that's why Aaron Glenn declined their interview.
Yeah,
it's because he knew that it was a formality, it was a foregone conclusion, and he didn't want to be just one of the guys that like they can check off their list and say, okay, like we met the requirement.
Right. You know, I mean, there's definitely room for improvement in that aspect. I mean, I understand the concept of the rule. Obviously, the hope is that one day it's going to be outdated because all these coaches are exceptional and it's merit based rather than connection based at that point. As of right now, yeah, it's. I mean, New England, they had their mindset on who it was.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone knew. So, I mean, you can't fault them too much, I guess, because regardless of who they were going to interview, I think the conclusion was already drawn on the wall.
Yeah.
So even if they had the most professional or credible candidate who was a minority, they were still probably going to go with Mike Vrabel just due to his connections there in New England. So for me, I mean, the New England job is wanted because of Drake May, and I feel like the positivity that's going around New England right now in terms of their football team. They have the third overall pick now, or fourth overall pick, or something.
Yep.
So
the fourth,
fourth overall pick. So they have some building blocks there that for head coach to make it a long tenure there for a potential head coach. And I mean, if Mike Vrabel, even when he was in Tennessee, he was still respected and adored. So to me, I think it's a match made in heaven, regardless.
Yeah.
Vrabel and the Patriots. But I mean, the Rooney Rule is there for a reason. I hope it gets outdated sometime during our lifetime, especially. But it's just going to be one of those things where, I mean, some people are just going to have to live with it until the rest of this culture adapts to it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm 99% sure about this story, but, you know, I know some people might say, well, why do they have to check the box if they know they want Mike Vrabel?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, you know, because of his credentials and nothing else, right?
Right.
Like, why do you have to do that? And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm 99% sure that Mike Tomlin was like a Rooney Rule, like check the box to say that we, you know, met the requirement. And then he blew Pittsburgh away and got the job, and the rest is history.
Right.
So he wasn't the guy that they wanted. He came in and dominated his interview and blew the Rooneys away, the Rooney family, the Pittsburgh organization, and ended up getting the job that he wasn't expected to get.
Yeah. I mean, this definitely, the Rooney Rule in itself is for a lot of these candidates that, because before Mike Tomlin got hired, I didn't hear about Mike Tomlin. I had no idea about Mike Tomlin when Bill Cowher was still there and he was retiring or whatever. And to me, it allows these small time, I guess undernamed candidates the potential to get interviewed, have their names circulate with other franchises, even if you don't get hired for the team that initially hired or interviews you. At least your name is now out there. It's in the media. It's within other GM groups to see. It's just a foot in the door type of thing.
Yeah.
And for as of right now, I can definitely jump on board with that. But like I said, obviously the hope is that eventually it's all merit based. And I mean, Josh McDaniels, that kind of irks me. Because it's like I said, it's like his fifth sin over there in New England. So it's like at some point we have to adapt. But I mean, as long as I guess he's producing NFL caliber offenses, it's hard to argue with a counterpoint on that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you there with Josh McDaniels. I mean, the guy's not a head coach. He's proven that.
Yeah.
But he can, you know, he's a decent offensive coordinator. All right. So we're going to shake it up a little bit this week, and it's kind of the format of the show. So obviously we don't have all the games done, but basically what we're going to do is just kind of go game by game, present like a top story that we took away from the game, and then just break the whole game down in general. So
perfect.
I'll let you go first.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll start off with Saturday morning or afternoon, which was the Houston and Chargers game.
Okay. Time out real quick.
Okay.
Sorry. Did you know
that? Did I know?
Did you know that since Houston became a team,
uh-huh,
every single one of their wild card weekend playoff games has been the first game on Saturday?
Yeah. I saw a thing about that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, they've been the early game on Saturday, I think, because like not a lot of like the NFL maybe doesn't view them as like a desirable like primetime matchup.
Yeah, it's not a big market valued city.
I just thought that was crazy. Yeah. Every single one of their first round games have been the first game on Saturday.
Yeah,
I just thought that was interesting.
So well, at least Houston fans can prepare.
Yeah, right. Seriously, just pencil it in for next year.
You know what, to take time off.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, Houston, I feel like is an enigma right now. I have no idea what's going on, what got into them. I don't know what they put in the water over there. It felt like these teams just flipped the script on each other.
I couldn't agree more.
The Chargers lost complete control over everything. Justin Herbert had the worst performance of maybe his career.
Definitely of the season.
Yeah, definitely of the season. I mean, he threw 3 interceptions all year long and only throw 4 in one single game. That's definitely an anomaly right there. And honestly, that's my top story, is Justin Herbert's struggle with the postseason. Obviously, he doesn't have that much experience in the postseason.
He's 0-2 now, right?
He's 0-2. Games. The other game was the 27-point blown lead against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, I mean, at this point, the playoffs just have to have a bitter taste on Justin Herbert, and it's probably going to be more of a mental game now going forward rather than a physical one. Obviously, Justin Herbert, I always claim I'm one of the biggest Justin Herbert fans. It's just one of those things where he just had a bad day at the office. I mean, he finished 14 for 32, 242 yards, 1 TD, 4 interceptions. That is going to definitely put your team in a sour condition. And kudos to Houston. They took care of the ball for the most part. C.J. Stroud had 1 interception, 1 TD pass. But for the most part, they weren't giving the ball away. They took advantage of the turnovers. Obviously, there was a pick 6 in there thrown by Justin Herbert and almost another one. So to me, it was definitely more of a tale of Justin Herbert basically dismantling his own team rather than Houston putting the Chargers season to rest convincingly. It's just one of those things where I feel like Houston's problems are still there, because it was just Nico Collins and Mixon had a good game. But for the most part, their defense definitely showed up, and that's what put them over the top over the Chargers.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'll maybe give him being Herbert, mm-hmm. maybe one more year in the postseason before I start to like really question if he's like the Aaron Judge of and the NFL just like cannot perform in the postseason.
Right.
But I mean, you think about, here's the thing, that his first year and even his lack of playoff appearance, you could attribute very easily to my boy Brandon Staley.
Mm-hmm.
And just the lack of coaching. And anybody who listened last year knows how much I hated Brandon Staley. I thought he was just the worst coach in the entire NFL. Anyways, I digress. But you could very easily attribute that, his lack of success, to his lack of coaching around him, right?
Right?
You can't do that anymore with Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh is a national championship winning coach in college. Mm-hmm. He's made the playoffs in 4 of his 5 years coaching in the NFL, including this year.
Yeah.
So the dude can coach.
Right.
Maybe if the same thing happens next year and Herbert just lays an egg, I think that then the narrative is maybe going to change. I think you'll hear it this year. Mm-hmm. Like if you turn on talk radio tomorrow, I guarantee you'll hear something to the effect of Herbert being overrated and having issues in the playoffs.
That's definitely.
But I still think it's a year too early for that.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be the narrative going into next year. Is he overrated? He's the franchise guy. Yada yada. I agree with you. There's one more year. Third time's the charm, right?
Yeah.
Give him one more year in the playoffs. See what happens. Jim Harbaugh is more than likely going to get you in there. It's going to be a tough division. Obviously, you still have the Chiefs there. Denver's on the up and up. Vegas is existent. But yeah, for the Chargers,
existent. Vegas, they have a team.
They have a team. They're there.
That's about all we can say about that.
That's right.
They're existent. That took me a minute. That was funny.
But yeah, the Chargers with Jim Harbaugh, he knows how to coach. He knows how to win. So we'll see if they sneak in like they did this year.
I mean, here, you know, last thing on this game, at least for me,
right.
I mean, off the top of your head, what would you know, what's the identity of the Los Angeles Chargers this year? Rushing the ball, right? They J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards. I mean, everybody knows that Jim Harbaugh builds his team from the offensive line first, and wants to run the ball and kind of, not, I don't want to say pass when they have to, mm-hmm. but pass to complement the run.
Yeah.
And so they had 50 rushing yards yesterday. versus Houston, who had 168 rushing yards. That was really the game for me, is they shut down what LA wanted to do, what they do best, and made them one dimensional. And in the case of yesterday, Herbert just couldn't cut it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, yesterday was the first game where I feel like I've really watched Derek Stingley Jr., the corner for Houston. The dude can play.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, obviously he had the interception that almost went for a pick six. There was a fourth down play where they ran fourth and two. They ran a quick out right at the sticks, and Stingley made the tackle and didn't give an inch and stopped him short. I was really impressed with him yesterday. I think that he was a big part of their overall success. But kudos to Houston's coaches in general. Because they had that team ready to play. D'Amico Ryans was fired up. CJ Stroud, I feel like, really flipped the whole complexion of the game in the end of the second quarter. He had a 23, 30 yard scramble that really kind of fired up everybody. D'Amico Ryans was fist bumping on the sideline, and it kind of just took off from there. So, I was really surprised by the outcome of yesterday, and I'm a little bit more excited now for their matchup with Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because if you would have told me that Houston's moving on to play Kansas City, I'm going to say, oh boy, they're going to get blown out of the water. But I mean, if yesterday's any indication, I'm a little bit more excited about that.
Yeah. Their defense is definitely going to keep them in that game. That's what they're going to have to rely on and see if they can create some havoc, on Patrick Mahomes, like they did Justin Herbert. That's going to be the biggest challenge. Obviously with this past game, Nico Collins had a big game, 7 receptions, 124 yards, 1 TD. That's to see that sort of connection with CJ Stroud, which CJ Stroud, I feel like, has not had a connection even with, really with Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs to that level. This extends even back to last year where CJ Stroud and Nico Collins really, really dominated, when they were on the field together. So if they can continue that connection and cause some problems defensively for Kansas City, they can go in there, but they're definitely severe underdogs. I'm not expecting them to.
I think the line opened at eight. I just looked at it. Hold on.
On the line?
Kansas City is a 7.5-point favorite right now. Yeah. I honestly expect that to get a little bigger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, some people probably. Especially how Houston has played this year, but it's definitely going to have. They're going to have to play their perfect game, and then no slip ups. Not the way they've been playing. They don't have the talent or the health right now to afford to not play a perfect game against Kansas City in Kansas City, outdoors in that cold as well.
Yeah,
you're going to have to definitely rely. That's going to be a mixing game for sure.
They just played each other not too long ago, right? I want to say they played either the week of Christmas or the week before Christmas. Week 16, the Chiefs beat the Texans 27-19.
Yeah.
And that was the week that Tank Dell got hurt.
Yeah.
So close one possession game. We'll see which team takes anything away from that, if at all.
Yeah. Yep.
What else you got?
I'm going to do the Packers and Eagles next.
Okay.
My top story on that is the Packers are going to are in desperate need of a number one receiver now.
Oh my God.
Christian Watson. They have a lot of serviceable wide receivers right now. They have Jaden Reed.
Yeah. And that was Romeo the story Dobbs. Going into the season. Was how many weapons they had.
Yeah. And Matt LaFleur has always tried to calm it down, the conversation. He says how annoying it is to label a guy at number one. But it's definitely something you're going to have to look into. Obviously this is a franchise that does not really invest in offensive playmakers to that degree. In first round picks or whatever. But you're looking at Jordan Love, potentially getting a big contract. Christian Watson obviously is a decent receiver. Romeo Dobbs is a decent receiver. Jaden Reed is everyone they have.
Arguably their best receiver. Yeah, yeah.
They have decent receivers there. The problem is none of them are really number one, can separate at any time, can make a play for you at any time. And obviously I feel like two of those receivers were taken out of the game today. And Dobbs and Reed and Christian Watson was done for the year last week.
He was throwing to nobody. Like middle of the third quarter on. he was throwing to Tucker Kraft, who's a, you know, pretty decent tight end, and then guys you've for the most part really never heard of.
Yeah, and the thing is, Josh Jacobs is a great running back. But we've talked about it. Josh Jacobs isn't the receiving threat that, say, an Aaron Jones is. So that, yep, that limits you there. It's definitely one of those things where you're definitely going to have to revamp your receiving core a little bit and see if you can upgrade somewhere and move everyone down a step and allow them to face, I want to say weaker competition, but lesser corners, I suppose, to put it meanly. I mean, it's terrible to say lesser corners, but it is what it is. But yeah, it's just, you can't afford to waste Jordan Love's early career, because obviously with all these quarterbacks getting monster contracts, it's going to put your franchise in a stranglehold. And at that point, it becomes really tough to even build a roster at that point. But yeah, as for the Eagles, offensively, it's been the same story all year. It's Barkley. It's the Barkley show.
Yeah, it was an ugly game to watch, honestly.
Yeah. Hurts had been out for
2.5 weeks.
Yeah, almost the entirety of three games. Finished 13 for 21, 131 yards, two TDs. I mean, it's nothing to write home about. A.J. Brown only had one reception for like 10 yards. He was reading a book on the sideline.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, A.J. Brown is just going to do A.J. Brown things at this point. But
kudos to him for not losing his mind.
Right. I feel like he did that to calm himself.
Yeah.
But like we've discussed during the season, this has transcended the offense into more of a rushing attack with Barkley. He's your focal point of your offense. It's no longer Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. It's now Barkley, and that's who they've been getting the ball to. Barkley finished with 25 attempts for 119 yards. Could have very well been 25 attempts for 150, 60 if he didn't slide at the very end to win the game and a TD. But Philadelphia, as of right now, as long as they don't face a team that knows how to stop Barkley, or if Barkley continues playing at the level that he's been playing at, their defense is definitely something to watch out for. I feel like they definitely showed something today. Darius Slay Jr., Gardner Johnson is still around. Zach Vaughn had an interception today. That defense is definitely stingy. I don't foresee them really having too many issues with too many teams in the NFC, to be honest with you. The Lions are going to present them problems, but I
disagree.
You think the defense is susceptible?
I disagree. I think that the offense sure as heck cannot play the way they played today. And if you remember, if you go back a couple weeks ago, I said that I was concerned. Like, I don't see them keeping up with the Vikings or the Lions.
Right.
Or quite honestly, one of these two teams that we're watching now, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Tampa Bay or Washington.
Tampa Bay or Washington. Yeah. I really don't know. I think that the Eagles defense played well today, but you also have to consider the opponent and the injuries and the fact that Jordan Love didn't look 100%, like he was coming off the elbow. So I don't know. And I told you before the game even started, like, I'm just not in on the Eagles this year.
Right.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I think they're a one-dimensional football team.
Yeah.
I think they can run the ball, and Hurts does literally barely enough in the passing game to make them successful. And there's going to come a time where they're going to have to win in the air, and they're just not – I don't have the faith that they're going to be able to do it. Like let's just hypothetically say that Washington wins this game right now. Minnesota wins tomorrow night. So Minnesota is then going to – the Eagles.
Right.
I'm taking Minnesota all day, every day. And I'll be happy to sit here next week and say I was dead wrong. If that's what ends up happening. But I don't see that. I really don't. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the Philadelphia Eagles are like you said, they are one dimensional. If they're not blowing the top off of you with A.J. Brown and with deep shots, Jalen Hurts just throwing bombs out there, I feel like they don't really have an intermediate game. Dallas Goedert's the closest thing they have to that, but usually it takes a little while for him to get involved in the passing game. And by that time, AJ Brown's, it's because AJ Brown's just frustrated and isn't running his routes, right, probably to the full extent of his abilities. Devontae Smith is getting covered or safety help on the top. It's just one of those things where if they are not blowing the top off of you, they're going to try to run it down your throat with Saquon Barkley. But like I said, if there's a team that can stop Saquon Barkley and you face and you force Jalen Hurts to be a quarterback, you have a really good chance, I feel like, and to knock them off. But like I said, it's going to be up to their defense to keep them in these games. Watching them today, I don't think they're going to blow out any team.
No, I don't either.
Not the Vikings, not the Commanders.
If we're being fair, they should have annihilated the Packers
today. Yeah, they should have.
They should have blown the doors off that game. Yeah. What was it? Two touchdown possession? It was within reach for the majority of the game.
Yeah. Honestly, if it wasn't for all those injuries that Green Bay sustained, it probably would have been a lot closer. Philadelphia should have definitely stepped on the throats on Green Bay a lot more, especially after the beginning where they got the kickoff return fumble that Green Bay had. Obviously, they scored a touchdown on that, but after that, nothing. They had good field position, and that was it. That was like the only reason they got to score. Philadelphia, their defense is gonna be the reason they win games, really. And Saquon Barkley, it's not gonna, if they're gonna rely on their passing game, I feel like they're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking I could see a scenario where Minnesota goes on the road to the Eagles. It's cold. It's outdoors. They're a dome team.
Yeah,
they're in Philadelphia. Like I could see a scenario where the elements and just the environment, like the Eagles win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I there's zero scenario where I see them going to Detroit and winning. I don't see the Eagles going to Detroit and keeping up with them offensively.
Yeah, Detroit.
I really don't.
Detroit is a different monster, especially offensively. They're definitely going to present that defense problems. That defense is definitely going to be extended in a way that none of these other teams, I feel like, can extend them. Not even Minnesota or either of these teams, Commanders or Tampa Bay. The Lions are just way too talented on that roster from top to bottom, especially on offense. They're the number one scoring offense for a reason. Philadelphia is going to be in a world of hurt if they cannot get AJ Brown and Devontae Smith involved in that game. I would definitely contend it would be a blowout for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm kind of rooting for that scenario where it's like Washington at Detroit next week,
uh-huh,
Minnesota at the Eagles. I think that would be two phenomenal games.
Yep.
But all right, my turn.
Your turn.
So my first headline, and it really pains me to say this. We talk a lot about this on the show, but it's time for a change in Pittsburgh.
Ooh,
it's time for them to, and not a firing, right? It's time for them to literally, Mike Tomlin and the ownership group to look at each other and say, it's been a phenomenal run, but it's time for a change.
A mutual parting of ways. Okay, Bill Belichick.
Well, I was literally just told the words out of my mouth. A legitimate mutual parting of ways. Right. Not a, hey, Bill, you're fired, but we're going to call it this.
Right.
I think this would be a scenario where literally both parties, the Steelers can say, hey, we need a new voice. You're amazing. Mm-hmm. But it's been, 18, 19 years, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Tomlin could literally have his pick of any job. And they would take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he all of a sudden becomes
I mean, the example coveted that I keep hearing is Andy Reid coached for a million years in Philadelphia, had a ton of success, was never able to get over the hump and win the Super Bowl, went directly to Kansas City. I don't think he sat out a year. I think he literally got hired from the Eagles to Kansas City, if I remember correctly. And obviously the rest is history. And I could see that with Tomlin, if he just goes somewhere else and kind of gets that fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my headline of the Ravens and the Steelers game. So the Steelers have not won a playoff game since 2016.
That's a long time.
And it's been five straight playoff appearances of one and dones.
Mm-hmm.
That's gotta be weighing on Steelers ownership. Obviously I'm sure it's weighing on Mike Tomlin as well.
Right.
But the ownership group specifically, I mean, they went out on record after last year, after they lost to the Bills in the first round, and said that they're tired of not being able to go on deep playoff runs. So who knows? I mean, that would be one thing that it's easy for me to sit here and say this, but I feel like it would still shock me to hear it actually happen.
Right.
But I mean, the Steelers just looked completely dominated last night. There's no other way to put it. I mean, the Ravens won 28-14. I feel like the game was never really that close, to be honest. They jumped out to a 21-0 lead.
Yeah.
they had over 300 yards of total offense in the first half. They being the Ravens. I mean, just a complete domination. So, I mean, Derrick Henry ended up with 187 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns. They had the Ravens had 464 yards of total offense. Lamar Jackson threw in another 85 rushing yards. He had 175 passing and a couple touchdowns.
Right.
They just from the start of the game, and Kirk Herbstreit said it at halftime. He's like, this doesn't look like a Steelers game. He there's reels all over. He was actually trending on Twitter. He's like, where the hell is the fight from this team at halftime? He's like, this is not the Steelers team that you're attributed to seeing, a Mike Tomlin coach team.
Right.
And so I just think that I think it's time. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that, remember, they went into the playoffs with a 4-game losing streak. It's now 5.
Yeah. They were 10-3 and finished 10-7. Yeah, 10-7. Absolutely.
Yep. And you have to wonder how lost, I guess, the locker room was with Russell Wilson still being in there. Offensively, obviously, they've had their issues. But obviously, when you have two quarterbacks who are I guess, serviceable at the quarterback position, and I mean, you were, what, 3-1, 4-1 with Justin Fields before you made the switch with Russell Wilson, and all of a sudden you're on a 4-game losing streak with Russell Wilson. Why aren't you switching back to Justin Fields, sort of thing? All of a sudden, you're creating locker room tension. Yes, having two good quarterbacks is a good problem to have until it becomes a bad problem to have in that locker room, because all of a sudden you're thinking there's a split thing of, like, hey, that guy can do better, that guy can do. It becomes a whole entire mess there. And to me, Russell Wilson, I mean, he had a good little resurgence at the beginning.
Yeah.
When they first made the switch, but obviously, I don't know what happened, whether it's play calling, whether it's just ability or defenses adjusting to the play of Russell Wilson instead of game planning for Justin Fields now. But obviously, Russell Wilson definitely has a better, more accurate arm, I should say. I don't know. It just seems like last year they lost by 14 points to the Bills, and this year you're in the same position. You lost by 14 points.
Yep.
So it's like you didn't make any progress. Obviously, their defense is what should have won you the game, but giving up 400 plus yards.
Yeah.
Like you said, Kirk Herbstreit has all the right things, said all the right things in the world. There's no fight. There's nothing there that resembled Pittsburgh Steelers football. Their defense did not show up. TJ Watt tried, that defensive line was still after the quarterback, but I mean, when the rest of the team is just allowing big play after big play, especially without Zay Flowers there, there's no Zay Flowers there for Baltimore. So that's their number one receiver, potentially like best playmaker outside of Derrick Henry. So to me, it was astounding to see the result. I didn't expect that result at all.
And not to mention, this is a team in Baltimore that you have dominated for the last several years. I mean, they were 8-2 against them in the last 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know the Ravens just beat them, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
But still, that's a pretty big sample size of success.
Right.
Where you would think that would have bred a certain amount of confidence going into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it just literally looks like from the very first snap that the Steelers had no chance.
Yeah.
And I mean, on the flip side, kudos to the Ravens.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it on the show last week, how I felt like this was a really bad draw for them, having to face that division opponent who they have no success against. I was really concerned that maybe it was going to be Lamar that we'd be sitting here talking about and his lack of playoff success, but they really shut down any doubts on that very, very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And had a phenomenal game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson, I feel like he's kind of identified himself
after he's a passer.
Yeah, after Todd Monken came in last year. Obviously, another year in that system is definitely improved. his playmaking abilities with his arm. Obviously, we know what he can do with his legs, so that's always a potential threat. I mean, that zone read option is just deadly for any defense to try to counter.
I mean, there was a time in, I think it was the first quarter, where he ran four straight read options and took it himself and got like 5 to 6 yards every play.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like you can't focus on him because you have Derrick Henry that's correct. Right there. And that's a.
It's scary.
Yeah,
it's scary.
It's like I regret not valuing that signing during the offseason as much as I feel like I should have.
Well, I think for me it was like, okay, how are they going to be able to feed both mouths?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I couldn't see it.
No.
Like on paper, it's wow, you got Derrick Henry and you got Lamar. Like that's amazing.
Yeah.
But you got to mesh the two together.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see it in like how it was going to develop, much like the Bills at the beginning of the season, how we just couldn't see how they were going to be successful.
Right.
And I mean, well, kudos to the Ravens because it's downright lethal.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to credit Tom Monken again, because I feel like it works because he's worked on Lamar Jackson's passing game so much. And now it's become a real threat that he can throw the ball with consistency and with conviction and can beat you with his arm. Obviously the legs are always there, and Derrick Henry, there'll always be a running team with Lamar Jackson there.
You know, he almost ran for 1,000 yards this year.
Yeah.
He had like 920 rushing yards.
Yep,
that's as a crazy. Quarterback.
Yep, yeah, it's insane. The numbers he put up are definitely MVP level, and we've discussed this with the MVP race.
He's having a better year,
than
he did the 2 years that he won MVP, and he's probably not going
to
win it.
Yeah, it's insane to me. But yeah, Lamar Jackson is just he's a phenom, man. It's crazy the amount of things that he's learned himself to do as he's. Progressed in his NFL career. So like tip your hats to Lamar Jackson. I feel like even if he loses because they play Buffalo
at
Buffalo.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute.
Yep. I mean, even if he loses, I'm done saying Lamar Jackson does not show up in the postseason. It's just that the AFC can be stacked with Buffalo and Kansas City always there. One of those two opponents being there in the divisional round, or the AFC championship game. And obviously the Bengals aren't going to go away anytime soon with Joe Burrow there. So the Ravens, they've just had bad luck. I just feel like overall Lamar Jackson shouldn't be pinned for all the blame. I think he's done everything he's needed to do to improve and set that team to greater heights. It's just, he's playing in an era with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen right now.
So it's an interesting conversation, and it's what they talk about, they being like national media a lot with the reason that the criticism gets brought onto Lamar Jackson is because he literally has nothing left to do except win the Super Bowl.
Right.
He's accomplished all of it.
Yeah.
He has two MVPs. He's put up historic passing numbers, rushing numbers. Like he's setting all sorts of records, but it's literally the last thing that he has to do.
That's crazy.
So I think like, even if they go out and he has a phenomenal game next week and they lose to Buffalo, I think you're going to hear that. Lamar doesn't show up in the playoffs, you know, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's because, you know, these games, like regular season stats, don't mean anything anymore to him. Like that's what he's going to be measured by. Did you get to a Super Bowl? Did you win a Super Bowl? And how many of them?
Right. Yeah. It's unfortunate because, like, to me, like, yes, the ultimate prize is the Super Bowl, obviously, but it's just really hard to do to even get there when you got Kansas City making it to two Super Bowls in a row and, what, winning three already during the Patrick Mahomes era. Yep. It's just being at the wrong place at the wrong time almost for Lamar Jackson. And you can even extend that argument to Josh Allen. Obviously, yeah. How long do we have to say can we let Josh Allen go if that's going to be the narrative against Lamar Jackson? Obviously, Josh Allen has put up classic games against Patrick Mahomes every time they play each other during the playoffs. And that might be what kind of gets him away with it, because he's put his team in positions to win the game. It's just always his defenses that kind of let the wind slip through their fingers. But I feel like Lamar Jackson should be up there. It just infuriates me a little bit that we're going to knock him for just being in an era where it's just dominated by a couple other quarterbacks, and Joe Burrow is right there with them as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. All right. So my headline of the Denver Broncos and Buffalo Bills game is that I was right and the Bengals would have put up a better fight.
It was close, like I said. I didn't specify until when. Apparently, it was halftime.
No. You can't tell me I saw something last night, or actually it was this morning, and it was like a meme of like the Bengals fans watching the Steelers and then the actually all other wildcard teams, because all wildcard teams lost.
Yeah.
And basically just how infuriating it was watching the way they performed, because you can't tell me the Bengals wouldn't have put up a better fight against the Bills. I mean, the Broncos, they came out and they punched him in the mouth and gave him their best shot and, you know, went up early. But I mean, what the heck was the final score of this game? It was like 31 to 7 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bills just trounced them. It's funny. You know, my wife who is, she's no longer a closet Bills fan. She's a real Bills fan.
She's out and open.
You know, I told her, I tried to get her to the dark side with the Jets, and, you know, bought her all the clothes and the shirts and everything. And it's just not going to happen.
They got to win though. That's the problem.
I can't even blame her. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's why I've given up, but she was sitting here, and when the Broncos went up 7-0, and I think it was like the middle of the second quarter, it was like 7-3 still. They were winning, but the Bills were dominating yardage, time of possession, like everything. Yeah. And I could just tell, and she's like, man, this is going to be a tough game. And I'm like, just wait. Other than that one 45-yard touchdown or whatever it was, the Bills were dominating the game. It just didn't reflect it in the score. And sure enough, the floodgates opened in the third quarter and you know, reality set in for both teams. And I mean, some statistics, Josh Allen played a phenomenal game, 20 of 26, 272 yards, 2 touchdowns. James Cook, 23 attempts for 120 yards, 1 touchdown. I love watching him run the ball.
Yeah.
I just do. He's a one cut slasher. Like
you know what he's doing, and you cannot stop.
He's so good. Yep. He's so good. 8 different receivers caught a pass today, which I think is what makes this team so deadly.
Yeah.
Because you really you can't make them one dimensional.
Yeah.
Or I guess, let me rephrase. You can't take away their best weapon, because at any given time, any given game, that can be somebody else. Today, Curtis Samuel had the most receiving yards. Curtis Samuel. I mean, you know, next week it could be Keon Coleman. It could be Dalton Kincaid. It could be Khalil Shakir.
Yeah.
I mean, which they showed a stat today, which blew my mind.
Uh-huh.
Did you watch? You didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
So other than Jamar Chase, Khalil Shakir led the league in yards after contact.
Yards after contact.
He had like over 550 yards after contact this year. Second in the NFL behind Jamar Chase.
Wow.
Blew my mind.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know. So, I mean, it just shows what makes this team so deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kudos to them, because everybody, including you, was saying that this could be a trap game. Denver could shock the world. You know, they have a phenomenal defense, blah, 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 blah. And I wasn't one of those people. I thought that the Bills were going to do exactly what they did.
Right.
But kudos to them for kind of blocking out the noise. And doing what they pretty much did all year, which was start slow and show up in the third quarter.
Yeah, it feels like the Bills have the mentality. Like, this convinced me that they're focused on the goal now. Even if they face, I don't want to jump ahead, but even if they face the Kansas City Chiefs, I feel like this team in particular has the mental fortitude to overcome that obstacle, which is the Chiefs. So, like, this could have been a potential trap game. They aren't no Bengals, so obviously Bo Nix is probably years away from becoming anything like Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow definitely would have put up a better fight offensively.
I think the Broncos have a lot to be excited about, though.
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely on the up and up. That defense, I mean, laid a little bit of a goose egg afterwards, the first half into the second half. It's just going to be one of those things where it's going to depend on how Bo Nix matures and develops as a quarterback. If they can get someone else in there outside of Courtland Sutton, that'll do wonders for his development as well. If they can get a tight end in there to create that intermediate passing game, running back situation is definitely something they're going to have to look into, because they right now they have Javonte Williams, Jalil McLaughlin, running backs that they're a running back by committee right now, and they don't really have that number one running back that, that can take over a game like a Derrick Henry or anyone like that. So to still make the playoffs under the cushion, the holes in the roster that they did, I tip my hat to Sean Payton and the coaching staff there in Denver. But that it's definitely going to be a harder fight next year because you know Cincinnati's coming. You know Cincinnati's going to be there because Joe Burrow is probably in his living room hot.
Oh my god!
Because of that game.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going to be one of those things where everyone's going to have to revamp the mentality, and it's going to be up to the GM and ownership group to fill in the holes of that roster, which I feel like are very fillable. They should be able to get away with some free agent signings and some draft picks. I don't think anything's going to be too needs to be too transcendent there in Denver.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, Sean Payton was spot on to be so excited about Bo Nix when they drafted him.
Right. Sure. Absolutely.
All right. So this sets up, regardless of the outcomes of all these games, it's the game that I'm most excited about next weekend. Ravens at the Bills. The two MVP favorites going at it with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen.
Yeah.
I absolutely cannot wait for this game.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be a phenomenal environment in Orchard Park for this game. So these two teams actually played each other week 4. It was Sunday Night Football. It was in Baltimore, and the Ravens just trumped them 35-10. The first play from scrimmage, Derrick Henry took it 87 yards for a touchdown. We were sitting here recording during that.
Yeah.
And the rest of the game followed suit with how it went. Just complete domination on the part of the Ravens. So, everything, my head is telling me that the Ravens are going to win this game, but I so badly want the Bills to win. as a non-biased, like,
know,
not a fan, couldn't care less. Like, I don't know. There's just something like, I really am rooting for the Bills in this situation.
To me, this is a coin flip. I have no idea where it's going to go. Obviously, week 4 is a long ways away. I feel like that's the one game that Buffalo had that was just a hiccup. And obviously it was up to a great opponent. In Baltimore, if someone's going to take advantage of a really bad game you're going to have, it's going to be an opponent like Baltimore. But Buffalo, like I said, Buffalo showed me today that they have that mentality, that they're focused. They know what they're in the playoffs to do. So it's definitely not going to be a blowout either way. I do not foresee a blowout in either direction. I think it's going to be a right hook, right or left uppercut type of back and forth type of game. One thing I do want to say, though, whoever wins this matchup, and if they end up winning MVP, I'm definitely going to start being a little bit of a conspiracy theorist about it being regular season awards.
You can't tell me it's just a regular season award. Yeah, it's funny. I was going to say that, too.
Yep.
As far as, like, X's and O's go for this game, this is just a horrible matchup for the Bills. And I was talking to Justin about it yesterday. My brother-in-law was a diehard Bills fan. Like, they needed to be huge Steelers fans last night so that they didn't have to play the Ravens. Because, yes, week 4 is a long ways away, but the Bills have one of the worst defenses stopping the rush in the NFL. And obviously with Baltimore, that's what they do best. So it's a horrible, horrible matchup for the Bills. And I don't really know what they can do to stop both of them.
Right.
You know, maybe they can, you know, stack the box and limit Derrick Henry, or they can, you know, play more nickel and they can have a corner who just spies on Lamar for the option plays. Like, maybe they can take one of them away, but I don't foresee a scenario where they're going to take both of them away. I really think that this is going to be like how the Bills and Rams game or the Bills and Lions game was, like 40-42 or something ridiculous. Like, I could foresee that happening because I don't see a scenario where the Bills are all of a sudden going to be able to stop the run.
Yeah. Obviously, as the season went on, the Ravens, we talked about the Ravens defensively.
Their defense got considerably better.
Yeah. It's definitely improved during the latter half of the year. But one thing that you're still susceptible to is the passing game, and Josh Allen, that's going to be up to him to spread the ball around. As we talked about, 8 different receivers in the game, that's definitely going to be a way to counteract the Ravens offense. I mean, if you can keep them off the field, keep your defense rested, that's even if that's through the pass game, just short or intermediate routes. You don't have to hit the home run ball every single time if you're Buffalo. If you're Buffalo, you want Lamar Jackson on that bench.
Yeah,
I don't care yeah. if I'm missing a home run ball, because I'm going to get first down, and march it down the field rather than trying to hit the home run, because you know Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry are going to run it down your defense's throats, and they're probably going to have success unless there's some major adjustment made. And during the fourth quarter, when your defense is very tired after a whole game of being punished by Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, that's when it might show up, and it's going to might come down to a game-winning drive. I really feel like it's going to come down to whoever has the ball last type of game. I fear that if it's Lamar Jackson, I feel like we're going to see the same narrative that Buffalo has come so painfully aware of with Kansas City, which is you cannot trust your defense at all for a game-winning stop. So for Buffalo, if I'm Josh Allen, I'm just keeping the ball in my hands and making sure I can keep Lamar Jackson away.
Yeah, I mean, with I think that to your point about keeping Lamar off the field, James Cook is going to have a monster game.
Yeah.
He's going to have to – him, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, I don't know his status today. I think he got a concussion today, so he may not play. But James Cook and Ty Johnson specifically are going to have to really run the ball and burn that clock. But because of that, like if they're running the ball and the Ravens are, that clock is just going to be ticking.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's going to mean – a lot fewer possessions than usual.
Yeah.
Which is going to make every possession like extremely crucial.
Count.
I could see like halftime, like each team had the ball twice.
Right.
Like, and that was it because the clock is just melting away because all they're doing is running the ball. Like I really could foresee that happening.
Right.
So I think to your point, it's going to come down to a fourth quarter, big play.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think it's just because I feel like this year we're seeing a different Josh Allen. I feel like he's going to be the one to make the play.
Yeah,
I really do.
He's a man on a mission right now. But it's definitely going to be the most fun.
I can't wait.
The most fun game.
I cannot wait to watch it. My brother-in-law, he's like, dude, I'm going to be so nervous for a whole week. And I'm like, sucks for you, buddy. I can't wait. I can't wait to watch the game. Like, I'm just going to be sitting here totally relaxed. My team sucks.
Yeah.
And just watching a fantastic football game.
Yeah, this is the pros of having your team just
exactly
lay a goose egg throughout the regular season. You can just enjoy.
Yep.
But,
yeah. Awesome. Well, so we know the AFC matchups, mm-hmm. right? So we already talked about it. We have Houston at Kansas City, and we have Baltimore at Buffalo. We don't know times yet. I would be shocked if Buffalo and Baltimore is not one of the two primetime games.
Should be.
But that, you know, what do I know? And then obviously, so this game that we're watching now, which is going to have a phenomenal finish, it looks like.
Right.
Tampa Bay's up 17-13 as the third quarter is winding down. But so if Tampa Bay wins this game, they're going to the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And then Detroit will get the winner of tomorrow's game. If Washington wins this game, they're going to Detroit, and the Eagles will get the winner of tomorrow's game.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you're listening to this, this will all be settled.
Right.
But the NFC obviously is still to be determined. But either way, we're going to have – I mean, divisional round is the best weekend in football.
Mm-hmm.
I know the wild card round has more games, but it just seems like you get four – phenomenal games every single year.
Yeah, the competition definitely escalates to the point where this is what you want to see out of a football game. And obviously, this is to play in their respective championship games for their conferences. This is divisional round is definitely one of the most nerve-wracking weekends for fan bases, but for a fan, it's the best because you got two days filling up Saturday and Sunday, two games filling up each day. That's great. And to me, I can just sit on the couch and relax.
Yep. So do you foresee, like, if you had to pick one of the four top seed. So, you know, each 1 and 2 seed in each conference is playing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any of them going down
next week?
Next week.
So
Chiefs, Bills, Lions, Eagles. I mean, obviously we don't know who the Lions and Eagles are playing right. yet, but
obviously the Bills are on upset alert just because of the class of their opponent.
Yeah.
Just don't be shocked if the Ravens pull that one out. They're equals right now. Yeah. I feel like, so they're on potential watch, and then the Eagles for sure. If they face a high potent offense, that has a really good day at the office come next Sunday, and their defense just does not show up, and their offense stays as stagnant as it does, especially in their passing game, then they're definitely, to me, they're definitely the weaker of the two seeds between them and Buffalo.
Yeah, I agree.
And then in terms of the Lions and KC, the Eagles are definitely number four in those power rankings to me. But Buffalo might be the first one to fall just based on their opponent, to be honest with you.
And yeah, it sucks. I would be really surprised if either one seed lost to the Lions, regardless of who the Lions are facing.
Yeah,
Lions or the Chiefs. I don't think the Chiefs are going to lose to Houston.
Yeah.
But to your point, the two seeds are
on upset alert.
Are on upset alert. Right. For me, it's regardless of who the Eagles play.
Yeah.
Whether it's Tampa or whether it's like Minnesota or the Rams, I really think that I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I feel like I have a little bit more confidence in Tampa Bay's offense, to be honest with you, over Minnesota's.
Really?
Yeah.
Hot take.
I know.
Wow.
I don't know. I
what an idiot.
I know. I'm an idiot. I don't know what it is. I feel like I like Baker a little bit. The Baker Mike Evans connection
they're eating right now.
Yeah.
They're lighting it up.
Yeah. I don't know. Just like a smidge more than the Sam Darnold. Even if it's Justin Jefferson. I love Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
But I just trust Baker Mayfield a little bit more than Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for tonight.
Yeah.
With obviously some matchups to be determined still. Let's see what happens on this play. I'm going to call it.
That's a PAT.
Yep. So Washington's going to get the ball at the 1 yard line to start the fourth quarter right now.
Yep.
17-13 Tampa Bay. It's been a phenomenal game. We're in for a really good finish here. But
yep.
We will be back next week. After the last game of the weekend. So it's 3 o'clock and 6:30 on Sunday. So after that game wraps up, we'll have a full show for you. We'll know the matchups for the AFC and NFC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Preview those, break down the four divisional round games and hopefully give you everything you need to know.
Right.
Hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to What Did They Know podcast. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media outlets to see future episode details. And don't forget to send in any questions or topics that you want to see the guys discuss in their weekly episodes to come.